Find the book of Habakkuk. That's where we're going to be tonight. It's a book we don't study much at all. In fact, it's almost an unknown book because Habakkuk himself is not a very well-known character. Only three chapters, and we're going to try to look at all three of them. We're not going to look at every verse, and that's why if you'll take that pew Bible and have it in your lap, and just sort of as we get to the various sections, as we talk about the things, then read the verses that are there or read those verses that are on the screen to try to help us have understanding. Habakkuk has a problem, and that is Habakkuk sees evil in this world and he wonders where God is. You ever had that problem? Why do bad things happen to good people? And why doesn't he do something about it? Why doesn't God just go out here? Because I know what God's like, and if I were God, this is the way that I would do it. Now, as we'll look at this, I think you'll be able to understand that Habakkuk lives at a time when Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian armies are coming against Jerusalem again and again. You got to understand about Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was, when he first came, was actually the general. He was not the king in 605 when he came. His father actually was the king. But in 612 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar had destroyed Nineveh, just like God had said that was what was going to happen to Nineveh. God's used Nebuchadnezzar to destroy. He's seen Nebuchadnezzar as he's come down and in the lifetime of Nebuchadnezzar fighting against Egypt and ultimately making three forays into Palestine and destroying the holy city. Nebuchadnezzar has a problem, and that is he can't figure out what God's up to. And so whenever you look at those verses that are part of the text over in chapter 3, when God answers the question, Habakkuk says, "When I heard this, my body trembled, my lips quivered at his voice." And here's where I arrived at, even though the fig tree may not blossom, verse 17, nor the fruit be on the vine, even though there's great devastation, I am still going to trust in God. I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. And that's the bottom line answer to all of these things. Nebuchadnezzar is not going to figure it all out. There's going to be problems in the world where Nebuchadnezzar is, where Nebuchadnezzar is, but there are going to be problems in the life of Habakkuk. And so his ultimate thing is, even if I cannot figure it all out, I still am going to trust God. Now then, thankfully, God gives answers to some of Habakkuk's questions. And that's why this book is so important. How on earth can a wicked, evil man like Nebuchadnezzar come and destroy the holy place? How on earth could a wicked man have precedence over that individual who is righteous? We have that same problems, do we not? Whenever we ask the question, why do godly people suffer? We have that very same problem. Why do bad things happen to good people? And that's where Habakkuk is. He's trying to sort all of that out. And so in these early verses of chapter 1, he says, "O Lord," chapter 1, verse 2, "how long shall I cry and you will not hear?" Habakkuk says, "Lord, I've been crying out to you and I don't seem to be getting an answer. And as I cry out even to you, violence, because there is violence, and you won't come to help. God, where are you when I need you?" And that's the question. And the question is asked in various forms throughout it. Habakkuk deals first with the problem of the evil that's in the city of Jerusalem. And he's got to understand that, and we've got to understand that it may be probable that Habakkuk is talking not in these early verses about the evil that is happening with Nebuchadnezzar as he is coming, but even the evil that there is in that city. Because the very reason that Nebuchadnezzar was allowed to come to destroy that city is because of the evil that is there. And he says, "The law is powerless and justice never goes forth. I cannot figure out where God is. And I'm calling out to God, and honestly and truly, I do not seem to be getting answers." That's Habakkuk's statement. Now look at the next section where the Lord begins to answer that by saying, "Look among the nations and watch, be utterly astounded, God says, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe though it were told you, for indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans. Now Chaldea is another name for Babylon. You may recall that Abraham was from Ur of the Chaldees. And so Chaldea is the ancient name for this area. In the days of Habakkuk, it was called more popularly Babylon. In our own day, it's called Iraq. And so the Lord says, I'm going to cause something to happen that you're not going to believe. It's very likely that a part of what he is talking about is the evil that Nebuchadnezzar is going to do when he comes and destroys the holiest city on earth. But the other aspect of that is what God is going to do to Babylon and what God is going to do to Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 6, he says, I'm raising up the Chaldeans. A bitter and a hasty army marches throughout the breadth of the land, possess the dwelling places that is not there. And then the next section gives a long description of his army. They're terrible. They're dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceeds from them. Their horses are swifter than lepers and more fierce than evening wolves. And one of the reasons this lesson came about actually is because of that Monday night study as we're studying through the book of Revelation. Because this is the same kind of imagery that you're having over there in the book of Revelation. And that is, here are these animals that are like leopards, and here are these animals that are like the evening wolves. And they're marching because they're such a terrible, terrible army. He says, they all come for violence. Verse 9, their faces are set like the east wind. They gather captives like sands. They scoff at kings. And so here's this massive description of the army of Nebuchadnezzar as it's approaching Nineveh and destroying Nineveh. And as it's coming down against Jerusalem, not one time, but three times. It's a terrible, devastating army that is coming. And nobody can seem to stand before them. They're just like a big vacuum cleaner that's just sucking up everything in the way. The captives are sucked up like sand. They're gathered like sand. And princes are scorned by them. They deride every stronghold, for they heap up the earthen mounds and seize it. You see, Nineveh had been an unbelievably massive city, rivaling in some respects the grandeur of the city of Babylon itself. Nebuchadnezzar's army had gone and destroyed Nineveh and left it in ruins. If you listen to the news from Iraq in our own day, and they talk about a battle taking place in Mosul or Mosul, you need to understand that's the very city of Nineveh. And right in the middle of that city, and you can Google this on Google Earth if you like and find it, right in the middle of that city are the ruins of ancient Nineveh, where excavation is often made as they study this. Nothing is going to be able to withstand Nebuchadnezzar. And then Habakkuk says, but I don't understand it. Because God has always brought about punishment of those who are wicked. He is of eyes too pure not to move against evil. In verse 12 he says, God, are you not from everlasting, my God? We shall not die, O Lord. You've appointed them for judgment. O rock, you've marked them for correction. Understand that. But still we're hurting. God, why don't you do something about this evil nation? You are of eyes too pure to look at iniquity and not be moved against it. You are too holy. And how on earth is it that you hold your tongue when the wicked devour a person who is more righteous than he? God, why are you letting this happen? And then he describes these evil men who capture men like fish, and they take all of them with a hook. Verse 15, they catch them in a net. They gather them in the dragnet. And therefore they rejoice. And they are glad whenever all of that happens. And then he says, they sacrifice to that net. And they burn incense to their drag nets. Because by them their share is sumptuous and their food is plentiful. Here's Nebuchadnezzar's army and he's taking everything and capturing men like in a fish net. And there are those fish that are just cast away and yet they're getting rich by all that they've done. God, how is it that you can just stand by and let them worship the net, figuratively speaking? How can a holy God who rules the world allow Nebuchadnezzar to do all of these things? God, how can you stay there and not be moved? And so having said that, there's a chapter division. Chapter division more properly might ought to have come after this next verse, chapter 2, verse 1, whenever he says, I'm ready to listen, God. I will stand my watch and set myself upon the rampart and watch to see what he will say to me and what he will answer when I am corrected. I don't understand it, God. I cannot figure out how there can be evil Nebuchadnezzar destroying the holy place and taking the Ark of the Covenant and the candlestick and the table of showbread and those Ten Commandments. God, how can you possibly let that happen? I know I'm wrong. I just can't figure it out. And so I'm just going to be silent and I'm going to watch to see what God does. And then maybe I'll have some understanding. And so the Lord answers. And he says, Habakkuk, I've got an answer for you. And I want you to write it down and make it plain so that he who runs, he may run who reads it. For the vision that I'm about to give you is of something that is going to happen, not right now, but at the appointed time. Nebuchadnezzar's not going to get away with anything. The judgment of God is going to come against Babylon, but it's not right now. You know our problem? Do you know our problem? Whenever we see ungodliness, we want immediate relief. One of the problems that this younger generation has to deal with is that you've almost never been in want and you've had instant gratification for absolutely everything that's happened in your life. Go back and talk to your grandparents or, you know, if you have great grandparents, go talk to them about a time when there was not instant gratification. And so the Lord says, Habakkuk, calm down. Just wait. Nebuchadnezzar is not getting away with anything. And at the appointed time, I am going to move and my actions will speak. And you'll be able to understand. Now write down these words. Behold the proud. His soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by faith. We'll come back to that expression, the just shall live by faith, because it's quoted in the New Testament as the summation of righteousness. But think about the pride of the kings of Babylon. Think about in Daniel chapter 4 when Nebuchadnezzar walks through all of the temples and sees the grandeur of Babylon. Are you aware that one of the wonders of the ancient world was a temple that Nebuchadnezzar had built, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon? He built it for one of his wives. And in ancient Babylon, there was one city or one building 600 feet high, a half mile in circumference. And Nebuchadnezzar walks through and he says, look what I've done. Look at how great I am. Look at the power that I have. And you may recall that a voice came out from heaven and said, Nebuchadnezzar, you're going to go out and eat grass like an oxen and your hair is going to be matted together like feathers until you learn the Most High is in charge of this world. His son or grandson was the very one who showed his pride whenever the army of the Medes and the Persians had surrounded the city of Babylon, ready to destroy it. They were God's avenging army, by the way, against Babylon, like Babylon had been God's avenging army against Jerusalem. And in a drunken feast, Nebuchadnezzar's son is there with his wives and concubines, and he calls for all of the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple to be brought. And they drank from those golden sacred vessels in a drunken feast. That's when in the book of Daniel there's that finger of a man's hand that appears on the wall and writes a message that causes that evil king, causes his knees to knock together. But look at him. He's proud. He transgresses by wine. He's a proud man. He does not stay at home. He enlarges his desires as hell, and he is like death and cannot be satisfied. He gathers to himself all the nations and heaps up for himself all of the people. Here's Nebuchadnezzar, so aptly described, like his army was described. Now he, and as representative of the kings of Babylon, he is described. And look at the pride that he has. Take up a proverb against this king and a taunting riddle against him and say, woe to you. Woe to him who increases by that which is not his. How long are you going to keep it? And to him who loads himself with many pledges and the honor of the kings that were being given to him, they will suddenly turn upon you. They will not they awaken who oppress you, and because you have plundered many nations, the remnant of the people shall plunder you, because men's blood and the violence of the land of the city and of all who dwell in it. Woe to him who covets gain for his own house. Nebuchadnezzar, you're not getting away with one single thing. Habakkuk, understand that God is only using this evil king to accomplish his purpose. That does not mean that he's more righteous than those who worship faithfully at the holy place in Jerusalem. And that does not mean that he's more righteous than Daniel and Shadrach and Abednego, who were taken captives over into Babylon. Folks, sometimes in this world, evil people are allowed to be evil. And sometimes the righteous do suffer because of evil that's in the world. Why is there suffering in this world? Because there's evil men, and God's allowed evil men to do evil. Why is it sometime in the workplace? Why is it that things do not go right and you're mistreated? Why is it that sometimes in school, people do that which is evil, and they're sometimes rewarded for the evil that they do, and seemingly evil triumphs? There's that person who cheats on that exam and makes a far better grade, and maybe even by lying in that respect gets a scholarship that was rightfully you because you would not cheat. Why is it that that happens? And the answer from the book of Habakkuk is God does not sleep. It's just a matter of time before the wicked are brought down. You look at verse 10. You give shameful counsel to your house, cutting off many people in sin against your soul. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and those who followed, the stones will cry out. You remember the blood of Abel that cried out from the earth? You remember the words of Jesus whenever they said to Jesus, tell these children not to sing Hosanna to the highest. Tell these children to quit shouting your praises in the temple. And Jesus said, if these children were not crying out, the stones would cry out. Because God's put this world together in such a way that whatever a man sows, that shall he reap. Verse 13, It is not of the Lord of hosts that people labor to feed the fire and nations weary themselves in vain. Verse 14. Because when the appointed time comes, the whole world will understand that there is a God in charge and be filled by that with the knowledge of God. Are you aware that Isaiah had said Babylon is going to be destroyed and become like Sodom and Gomorrah and it will never be inhabited? And when all of that transpired, when the army of the Medes and the Persians came and leveled Babylon to the ground, those walls 87 feet thick and 350 feet into the air, when it was all leveled to the ground, that's the very thing that God said would happen. God had said through Jeremiah that those walls were no protection for Babylon. And He'd said through Jeremiah that the rivers themselves would be dried up when the judgment of God came against Babylon. And that's exactly what, and the world could know that there was God, He was glorious, and His glory covers the earth as the waters covers the sea. And then He turns back to the evil. Those who give drink to their neighbors, praising or pressing him to your bottle to make him drunk that you may look on his nakedness. Filled with shame instead of glory, you also drink and be exposed as uncircumcised. Because the Lord has a cup in His right hand, and to use the language of the book of Revelation, the cup of His indignation is ready to be poured out at the appointed time. Because of the violence, Nebuchadnezzar, that you've done to Lebanon, and that violence will cover you, and the plunder of beasts will make them afraid. Because of men's blood and the violence of the land of the city and of all who dwell in it. And then the Lord looks at these people who were worshiping figuratively their nets and praising their dragnets. Look at that idol that you're praising. What is the advantage of an idol? What profit is it? Its maker carves it. The molten image is there is a teacher of lies, that the maker of its mold should trust in it to make mute idols, dumb idols which cannot speak. Woe to him who says to that wooden idol, awake, to the silent stone, to that God, arise, give me help. It shall teach me. It shall teach. It's overlaid with gold and silver, and there's no life in it. But the Lord is in His holy temple. The living God who speaks. And when God speaks, let all the earth remain silent before Him. The Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before Him. Then in chapter 3, Habakkuk says, I heard your speech and I was afraid. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. I'm ready to sit and wait. And in the midst of those years, make it known. In wrath, be merciful. And if somebody has ever asked you where God came from, verse 2 will tell you. God came from Teman. The Holy One from Mount Paran. Selah, which means stop and think about it. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of His praises. The Lord came from Teman? Oh, yes. This echoes the writings of Moses. When Moses said, God made His appearance over at Mount Sinai. And whenever the Israelites came to Teman, which is where the Edomites were, God reappeared. God was there. And then God was at Mount Paran. Moses himself was talking about the fact that God was here, and then God was here, and God was here, and God was here. Not that this is the city where He was born, but it's where He appeared. God was in the Garden of Eden. God came from the Garden of Eden and came to the ark and that Noah built. He was in the ark, and from the ark He came to Sodom and Gomorrah, and from Sodom and Gomorrah He came to the burning bush, and from the burning bush He came to Mount Sinai, and from Mount Sinai He came to Teman, and from Teman He came to Paran, and now He's come to Babylon. You need to understand that, Habakkuk, that God is not sitting up in heaven with His hands folded, unaware about anything that's happening on this earth. God has manifested Himself in history again and again. And so in these next several verses, you may recognize references to the manifestation of God at various times prior to the time of Habakkuk. That when His brightness, verse 4, was like the light, and He had rays flashing from His hands, and His power was hidden. Before Him there went pestilence, and fever followed at His feet. Think about those plagues down in the land of Egypt. He measured the earth. He looked and startled the nations. The everlasting mountains were scattered. Perpetual hills bow down. I saw the tents of Cushan in affliction, the curtains of the land of Midian troubled. This is God throughout the time when they're out in the wilderness and wandering throughout all of that land. Oh Lord, You were displeased with the rivers. Your anger was against the rivers. Was Your wrath not against the sea? You rode on Your horses. Your chariots, your salvation. Your bow was made ready. Oaths were sworn over Your arrows. Selah, You divided the earth with the rivers. God, You open up the Red Sea. You open up the Jordan River. God was there. Even when you may not have been aware of it, and you may, Habakkuk, have forgotten about it, that God has always been on this earth, and God has always been working. Habakkuk, don't lose sight of the fact that there's a living God in heaven. And that settles it all when it comes to life. When the mountains saw You, verse 10, they trembled. The overflowing of the waters passed by. The deep uttered its voice and lifted its hands on high. And the sun and the moon stood still in their habitation. Remember when Joshua prayed that the sun would stand still? Habakkuk, remember that? At the light of Your arrows they went, at the shining of Your glittering spear. You marched through the land in indignation. You trampled the nations in anger. You went forth for the salvation of Your people. You brought them into that promised land and gave them all of that and fought all of their battles for them. And the walls of Jericho that fell down without any effort at all relative to the magnitude of what happened. God was there and God was working. Habakkuk, don't you lose sight of that. And so on he goes. Verse 15, You walked through the seas with Your horses, through the heaps of great water. And Habakkuk says, and when I heard this, I was speechless. I had forgotten that God is concerned about what's happening on this earth. Now, when that time comes in your life, when adversity causes you to throw up your hands and thinks, where is God and why doesn't God do something about it? It might pay you to read the book of Habakkuk. He's seeing evil Nebuchadnezzar destroy the holy place. And the Lord says, don't you worry about Nebuchadnezzar. He's really My army. I am raising up the Chaldeans to accomplish My purpose against the evil people over in Jerusalem. But don't think Nebuchadnezzar is going to get away with anything. Because in his pride, he'll be brought low and he will be leveled. Habakkuk, remember God in history. Child of God at Palm Beach Lakes, who may be right this middle minute in the middle of adversity, and you can't figure out how or why. Someone's doing you wrong and they've got the upper hand, and you're thinking about where is God or why on earth is this happening to me? You need to think about the message of Habakkuk. And when Habakkuk did that, he said, I trembled. Rottenness entered my bones and I trembled in myself that I might rest in the day of trouble. You see, God gives to us a peace that passes all understanding and allows us to rest in the middle of the storm. Isn't that exactly what Jesus did? When that storm was there and the disciples were fearful of losing life itself, where's the Son of God? He's asleep in the boat. I want you to hear this. Those disciples in that boat thought the worst place on earth for anyone to be at that time was in that boat that was filling up with water. You know the truth? The safest place on earth to be was to be in that boat that had the Son of God in it. And when the storms come in our lives, as they will, we need to remember the safest place to be is to be in Christ, to be where the Son of God is. And so Habakkuk says, there may be that fig tree that doesn't blossom. There may not be any fruit on the vine. There may not be any fruits of the labor of those who are trying to get the olive crops in, and the fields may yield no food. The flock may be dying. There's no herds in the stall. Yet, Habakkuk's learned it. The lesson you and I need to learn, I'm going to trust my God. The Lord is my strength. He will make my feet like deer's feet and make me walk on the high mountains. That's astounding. And then there's this musical notation. Because of the poetical nature of the writing of Habakkuk, this was put to music. And instructions to the chief musician as to the instruments that were to be used in the singing of this song. There's one thing we've left out. And that is, back in chapter 2 when he says, the just shall live by faith. That's what Habakkuk was not doing. He thought he had to figure it out within himself instead of just trusting God to handle all of these things. And the message in the Old Testament and the New Testament is you live by faith. That's why we walk by faith, in order that we might live. Do you know what the Pharisees thought they lived by? By works. By keeping the Sabbath. By the mint, anise, and cumin. Jesus did not rebuke them for their devotion to the Sabbath, nor for tithing, meant Annas and Cummins. But he said, you've omitted the weightier matters of the law, and the third thing in that weightier matters of the law that they had omitted was faith. They were serving God ritualistically without faith. And so whenever we get to this verse in the New Testament, the just shall live by faith, let me quote it for you. I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Gentile, for therein, in the gospel, is revealed the righteousness of God from faith. That's where righteousness comes, from faith unto faith. In order to bring about faith, it is revealed that righteousness comes from faith unto faith. As it is written, the just shall live by faith. Now the lesson from us is not to make what we have ritualistic like the Jews. They are those who ritualistically believe that if they're immersed in water and eat bread and drink grape juice every Sunday, they're going to heaven, regardless of whether they trust in God or not. Their attitude toward baptism and toward the Lord's Supper is identical to the Jews' attitude toward the Sabbath and the keeping of the external aspects of the law. We're going to heaven because faith is manifested in baptism, and faith is manifested in the Lord's Supper. But our life comes because that watery grave of baptism is tied directly to faith. May God help us to have faith. Now remember this, you can't have faith without Bible study. And that's why a lesson like tonight is so important. Faith has been built as we've heard God speak through His prophet Habakkuk. Living by faith, trusting in Him for our salvation. His plan of salvation is so easy to discover. It begins and ends with faith. If you haven't done what's on the screen, then won't you come forward tonight and do it as together we stand and sing.